This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News and is brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Welcome into the latest edition of the physically distant Packers podcast. I am Jim Ozarski along with my colleague Tom Silverstein. We are distant. Tom is in his home. I am in mine. We hope you are doing the same and being healthy and safe as well. And Tom, I guess I'll start there. This has been a really unique start to the offseason. So we got to hit on this. I mean, for us, this is a remote time of year anyway with free agency and coaching changes. But it is a little strange, the fact that you and I have to text, call, we can't have coffee, you know, at Colectivo or any of our favorite places, or even see our colleagues in the newsroom on State Street at the Journal Sentinel.
Yeah, it's very strange. The ironic part is that the first week of free agency, I'm usually stuck at home. You know, we're sitting there following Twitter, trying to get a hold of agents, trying to get a hold of, you know, club people, and you're pretty much secluded anyway. So that first week wasn't very different, other than, you know, you, when you were done or had a minute, you wanted to get out of the house for a little while. Now, the hot part of free agency is over, and we're sort of in the third or fourth wave, really. Not much left out there, and now we're stuck at home still in the same procedure, and we're waiting on the draft. So I mean, I think there's still more free agency to go, but it all happened really fast and not very plentiful or bountiful for Green Bay.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sure some people are like, wait a minute, free agency's over. and yeah, I mean, look, Brian Gutekunst told us before the combine, they didn't have as much money. It was not going to be the same as a year ago. And the signings of Christian Kirksey and Rick Wagner, you know, I mean, that's been it in terms of the out of market or new players. And frankly, Tom, it's a little underwhelming. I don't know if they're better right now than they were, you know, when they lost the NFC Championship game to San Francisco.
Yeah, so if you want to clarify how this went, you know, so really they signed two street free agents, guys who really aren't unrestricted free agents in the technical term, meaning their contracts ran out. These guys were cut. And the Packers jumped on them right away. Rick Wagner, right tackle from Detroit, a longtime starter, kind of declining guy. Christian Kirksey from the Browns, cut, injured the last 2 years, hasn't really played more. I don't think he's played more than, what, four games in the last 2 years or since 2017, something like that.
Yeah, I think seven games in 18, two games in 19, I want to say.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, they cut Jimmy Graham, and they lost Brian Bulaga to San Diego, Blake Martinez, and Kyler Fackrell to the Giants, and B.J. Goodson to Cleveland. So you're right. I don't think they have gotten, I wouldn't consider that a plus, you know, some gain there. I would say that especially losing Balaga was probably the, probably is what you would consider their minus. Puts them in the minus.
Let's start with that one, Tom, because, I mean, you reported out of the combine they hadn't even engaged in any conversations with the right tackle, and that kind of sets a tone, right? But I think when, at least the sense I got from fans, and even a little bit in the media side, was $10 million a year for 3 years truly too rich? Especially, like, I'm sure, Tom, when we get the details of that deal, it's going to be a little front-loaded, you know, where Los Angeles can maybe get out of that in a year or two. And if you count the 13% state income tax, I mean, it's really only an $8.5 million deal and $9 million deal in other states. So what, I guess, does this truly mean Brian Gutekunst pegs a right tackle for the first round, excuse me, and Rick Wagner's that placeholder, you know, and maybe the kid wins in camp, maybe he doesn't, but you kind of got a Lane Taylor, Elton Jenkins situation, or did they miscalculate? Did they think Balaga wanted like a 4-year deal for 48? I don't know. How did you see that kind of play out, and maybe why did it go the way it did?
I think it was a cap measure. I think if they could have gotten Brian Balaga back for 1 year, I'm sure they would have taken him at $10 million. But they have to watch their cap dollars because they have some big contracts they want to get done this year. I mean, you're talking about Kenny Clark, 2021, Kenny Clark's a free agent, David Bakhtiari, Aaron Jones is a free agent, Corey Linsley's a free agent. Right there, that's four really key starters. And, you know, Bakhtiari and Clark are must signs. I mean, that's like you lose those two guys at either of those two guys, and you're making a huge mistake because they're longtime starters. They're keys. They're foundations to your team. I think that played the major part in it, that they just said, we're not, given the age, given our cap situation, we're not going to even bother with Brian Balaga unless he strikes out on the market, you know, and turns out to be a $5 million deal that they're not going to, they just knew it was not in the cards. So they went with Wagner, who's a low salary guy. And I think for our purposes right now, since we're not really getting into the draft, he's their starter. He's their starter at right tackle. And because we don't know what'll happen in the future. And go from there. And that's a net loss, as far as I'm concerned, from Brian Balaga to Rick Wagner.
And that sort of sets up these other positions, Tom, because I think there was some excitement, if you will, among fans. I don't know if you saw this social media wise, you know, whether it be an Austin Hooper or Corey Littleton. I think once Hunter Henry was taken off the market, Austin Hooper was going to be way too much money as the only available tight end of any worth. And even Littleton, I mean, if you're not going to pay $10 million for Blake Martinez, you know, some fans were up in arms about why not pay 12 or 13 for Corey Littleton. But I think you just outlined there, the Packers were never really going to go to those levels in this free agency period, were they? There was never going to be the $10 million a year guy unless he's already in that locker room.
Yeah, I agree. That was the plan all along. Gutekunst, of course, he throws his name into every guy. You know, let's hear what the price is going to be. Let's hear what Austin Hooper's price is going to be. Maybe it's winds up being worth it, but you know, let's hear what Corey Littleton's price is going to be. But as an agent said to me right before free agency, who had talked to the Packers, he got the sense that they were either going to sign one you know, one guy at $10, $12 million, or they were going to just go with a bunch of low rent type of guys, you know, a number of low rent guys. And the latter is what we're seeing, is that they're not going to spend big money on free agents this year. It's just, they did that last year. Now they got to rely on the guys that they got, you know, and develop some of those guys.
Well, the one other guy they got was Christian Kirksey, and we'll have a story up soon at jsonline.com, packersnews.com, where, you know, Kirksey is essentially the replacement for Blake Martinez. He's a little more athletic, a little more, I guess, able in coverage, but I think it'd be a misconception for Packers fans to think it's going to be a significant upgrade. He can run a little bit, you know, sure tackler, good character guy, good locker room guy. You know, I had an offensive coordinator tell me he's there. You know, you don't plan for him, you don't plan around him. You know, he's not going to make any interceptions, fumbles, splash plays. Basically, he described Blake Martinez.
In
a lot of ways.
I had one guy say he's not better than Blake Martinez, which kind of, I can see that. He doesn't make as many tackles. He's going to be better in coverage, as you mentioned. He's faster, but he's not a take-on guy. He doesn't blow up guards in the hole. He's a kind of a chase guy. But you're right. He's a great locker room guy. Fits exactly what they had been looking for, been building in the past couple of years. He's another placeholder, basically, till they figure out what they're going to do at inside linebacker.
Which is fascinating because, you know, and we can, in a forthcoming podcast, we'll talk about the draft, and obviously Brian Gutekunst is putting a lot of faith in his own evaluation, this coaching staff for guys on the roster. But free agency-wise, Tom, so, really, we just talked about the only two guys. You know, Will Redmond's back. A couple of these low-end kind of roster guys may return. But right now, Packers fans are probably screaming, where's the receiver? Where's the receiver? You know, we get, Adam Schefter says that Emmanuel Sanders had a conversation with the Packers. I mean, who knows what that actually entailed? But this, I think the fact that there's no market for free agent receivers, I don't know how to take that, Tom. Does that mean in a week or in a weekend, they're going to sign a guy or two that we actually know of? Because frankly, the market has bottomed out so drastically that, like, you kind of can't help yourself. Like, if you could get, I'm just going to say, Paul Richardson, super fast guy. He's a veteran. You kind of know what he is for a 1-year deal, vet minimum. Does he make the team? I don't know. But like at some point, do you almost throw a million or two that way? Or at this point, does it show, no, it is coming through the draft and through the development of the guys already on the roster?
Well, so there's a couple reasons why the market is so dead for receivers. One, it's not that good to begin with. Once Amari Cooper was off the board, I mean, there's really not an impact guy that I can think of. And number two, the draft is so strong in wide receivers that you'd be foolish to spend money on a wide receiver now. Even $1 million or $2 million, I think, why do that now? You've got such a good chance of landing good wide receivers. Now, they may not play right away. We know that rookie guys struggle, but it's such a remarkable year for, by all estimations, you won't find anybody who won't say that it's a remarkable year for wide receivers, that there's a pretty good chance you'll get a starter out of, even the Packers can get a starter out of this draft. So I wouldn't mess around with these guys. If you need them later, fine. But, you know, unless it's a minimum wage deal, and even then, minimum wage now is $910,000 for these guys. That's a lot of cap money. So I wouldn't expect them to be really in, other than, you know, with Emmanuel Sanders, they probably said, all right, what's the price? Let's find out. And, you know, apparently wasn't to their liking. I don't know that they would trade for anybody at this point. I don't expect them to do much else, and I wouldn't freak out about the receiver position yet. I would wait till the draft is over and then the free agency after that, because there will be free agency after that, after the draft. And if they don't have the position, you know, together by then you can worry.
And I think that's a good way to loop us back to the start of this podcast, Tom, where we mentioned, you know, what all of us are going through right now with as we live through this coronavirus pandemic. I mean, as we all know, sports has been greatly affected. It's only been a few weeks since the NBA and everything pretty much shut down. Christine Brennan at USA Today, our colleague on the national level, broke that the summer games will be postponed. I think, Tom, the NFL is, if no one's told me this, but my guess is in New York, they're sitting there crossing their fingers that they can get 2 weeks of practice in August to start on time. And the reason I bring all this up with your point of free agency coming late, nothing is happening. The draft will happen in a studio, but the rookie camps in early May were already basically canceled with all of the recommendations of people staying indoors, no mass gatherings. I've talked to some coaches, Tom, I'm sure you have, that really don't anticipate any spring workouts at all. No OTAs, no mini camps. That's sort of the expectation. So if that's the case, if you're a team, especially like the Packers, there's really no reason to do anything until after the draft if you're kind of set with the moves they've already made.
Yeah, if you know, at some point signing a veteran might behoove you, and I'm talking about a receiver, because if you don't have off-season workouts, then that limits what a rookie's going to be able to do, because those really help in the guys learning the playbook and understanding what the NFL is all about. You may see less impact from rookies this year because of no off-season workouts. But even so, there will be some guys available. Teams are going to shed players. There's still teams with tight against the cap. And I just don't think now is the time to really panic about it.
Right, for sure. And I guess I think it's important for people to know that, too, because it affects our coverage in a way. Like right now, we are remote. You know, the people we talk to, it is all over the phone for the most part. Occasionally, we can get to a place and meet someone. But the owners' meetings are Ryan Wood and Pete Doherty. We're supposed to go to Florida to see Matt LaFleur, Brian Gutekunst, Mark Murphy. That's not happening. Honestly, Tom, we haven't heard from the Packers. I highly doubt we're going to be considered essential personnel and allowed into Lambeau Field like we're used to the 3 days of the draft. So
no, I would be shocked if they open up the facility for us for the draft.
So, you know, we're obviously doing the best we can to bring you the same coverage, but clearly we're sort of adjusting what we do on the fly in a lot of ways. And you mentioned the rookie receiver coming in, what that guy could maybe process if things are canceled. I think it's a good bet to assume it will be, Tom. And what do you think that does for this coaching staff? Now, Elvis Whitted is the only one who's gone. They brought in a senior offensive line coach. They promoted Luke Getsy. They promoted Justin Vrabel, the receivers. Can you break down some of these coaching moves, I guess? And, I mean, frankly, those guys are just sitting around doing a whole lot of nothing up in Lambeau Field.
Yeah, well, if anything, they should be grinding tape and trying to steal stuff from other teams. Now's the time to do it. LaFleur always talks about how he likes to do that. It's a really good opportunity for them to do that kind of stuff now. I think coaching is going to really be critical this year. I think more so than any other year because of the reduction in time on the field. I think that you're going to have guys on the field less than you've ever had them. And there are probably going to be guys who come to camp who are out of shape. There's just, you know, you can't keep an eye on every single guy, and he's not there in the off-season workout to be monitored. I think that'll be an issue. I think the younger players, boy, they are going to have to be coached like nobody's business. And the new CBA restricts some of the time that they can be around as well. So the best coaches are going to shine. And it's going to be a real test of LaFleur's guys. It'll be a test of every coach's guys. And, you know, it probably would be a better year to have a established wide receivers coach, but they don't. So, you know, they'll just have to, they're going to have to really be on their toes.
And yeah, let's get into that just a little bit. You know, the dismissal of Alvis Whitted, I don't know about you. I was surprised. I didn't think, you know, other than maybe that brief second or two that some people thought Mike Pettine's job was in jeopardy. I didn't see a reason to change much, I guess, if you were Matt LaFleur, but yet that was a change made. And they went a while, Tom. They didn't, as far as I know, I didn't hear much about external interviews. They promote Jason Vrabel. We're talking about receivers. We're talking about a group. And maybe this is why Alvis Whitted wasn't retained, but outside of Devontae Adams, didn't really show much other than a buy-in to the blocking and some of those things. And now you're maybe talking about drafting a guy high. Maybe you're drafting two guys, three guys like they did a few years ago. I don't know. I guess I'm just sort of interested in your thought there on why they made that move. And again, does it matter? Because obviously the head coach doesn't feel, you know, an inexperienced guy like Jason Vrabel. Relatively speaking, he's been in the league for a while, but just to run that room, work with a passing game coordinator and Luke Getsy, and kind of make all that work in maybe a really, really compressed time window.
Well, we can speculate that somehow LaFleur was expecting to sign his brother, to get his brother to come from San Francisco, and probably would have had to be passing game coordinator, assistant head coach, or something like that. And maybe he was planning on moving Luke Getsy to wide receivers or, you know, some kind of special position. And that didn't happen. He got, you know, a little bit caught flat-footed, and he wound up having to hire Vrabel. I never got a good reason, and I don't think Whitted got a good reason as to why he got fired. And I think he was just basically a scapegoat because the receivers, you know, Valdez Scantling took a dive. Geronimo Allison took a dive. St. Brown got hurt, which isn't his fault. Lazard, I thought, performed tremendously. Adams had a really great year. Kumaro was okay. I don't know. I don't think we'll ever really know for sure, other than I just wonder if he had his brother in mind somewhere when he made that move.
Yeah. And what do you make of the addition of the new senior offensive assistant? You'll have to remind me of the
Coach
of the,
Barry.
Coach Barry. So let me preface by saying this before you can kind of break him down. So when Matt LaFleur was hired and brought in Adam Stenovich and Luke Butkus, you know, a year ago when we were talking about that move, Stenovich had never coached a room before. Neither had Butkus at the NFL level. And I had a former Packers assistant and longtime NFL coach say, you know, keep an eye out for Joe Philbin. You know, maybe at some point through the year they might, if they're still paying him, might bring him back as a senior offensive line consultant to help. You know what I mean? And that didn't happen. Obviously, and I think, I mean, I don't know if you heard different, but Bulaga, Bakhtiari, Lane Taylor, Lucas Patrick, Billy Turner, at least some of those guys never, I mean, they seem to buy into Stenovich and they seem to not have an issue with the younger guy. Now that said, the outside zone didn't really work. So is this sort of an indication of maybe get some help to teach that a little better? Is this an indicate? What do you think bringing in, you know, a coach like Barry means?
I'll be blunt. I think it was a buddy hire.
Okay.
You know, this is my buddy. He needs a job. I like him. They didn't quite cross paths at Central Michigan, but they were close. And I'm sure they know each other from there. And there was a chance to add someone he knows and trusts. And I think that's all there was to it. And if the guy would have been a quarterback's coach, he would have probably done the same thing. That's my impression, that this is just a case of bringing somebody on, another set of eyes that he trusts and or feels like is a up-and-coming guy that, why not? He was the highest he ever got was an assistant line coach in the NFL. And then he was a headline offensive line coach at my University of Miami for 1 year. So I don't think it's like he's bringing in a Joe Philbin in this case. Sounds to me like just a guy he knew and trusted.
And my apologies to Butch Berry for calling him an older guy. I mean, he's also very young. I mean, you know, relatively speaking, graduating in 2001. So he's also 40, kind of in that mix, but much more experience in terms of coaching the offensive line that way. So, those were the coaching moves. I guess we're curious to see how that'll all play out, especially, again, knowing that this time is going to be compressed in the offseason, Tom. And, you know, it's a little dead. You know, unlike last year this time, we had a lot to talk about free agency-wise. Before we wrap this up and then start looking forward to the end of April's draft and all that type of stuff, let's touch on those extensions you mentioned. First and foremost, Kenny Clark. I mean, this is the second offseason in a row where Brian Gutekunst has said, let's get a deal done. Last year, it didn't happen. Between now and then, Clark has a very good year. He changes agents. As far as we know, they didn't discuss anything during the offseason. Now we see defensive tackles cashing in a major way. Cincinnati, Tom, of all places, paying a DJ Rager $50 million or so. So what's maybe the latest on Kenny Clark? What do you think is happening there? And do you think that really truly is the effort to get done before camp, whereas maybe is a Bakhtiari or an Aaron Jones something they can kind of push into the season as they do, you know, a lot of other times?
Yeah, I think the Clark deal is essential. I think the money there is going to be north of $16 million per year. And it's probably the biggest reason why they're not spending a lot of money in free agency. I mean, this is just a deal. You don't let good players go. And Kenny Clark is better than DJ Reader, and he's better than Javon Hargrave. I mean, two guys who signed for roughly $13 million a year. I guarantee you that if Kenny Clark doesn't have a deal done, he'll have the franchise tag put on him. There are teams all over the league who would just drool over having him because he's young and he's versatile, and he wins at the nose tackle position more than the average nose tackle. Now, he's not, as I said in my column, he's not Brenson Buckner in that he's able to come up with 12 and a half sacks every year. But the older he gets, the better pass rusher he's going to get. And right now, he's a handful. You have to account for him. Every down, you have to account for him. And I think it went understated, but I think Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith owe a lot to Kenny Clark, because still the quickest way to the quarterback is up the middle, and they had to make sure that Kenny Clark was secured. So that will be a big deal for them. And I do think they'll get Bakhtiari done at some point too. The difference between those two is Bakhtiari's cap number is $14.7 million, and they'll be able to knock that down through the magic of salary cap configurations, you know, or of configurations. So, but with Clark, they probably won't. He's at 7.9, I think. And so his will hover right about there. So, but, you know, they need that. They need to get that done. They need to get Bakhtiari done. And then they'll see what they have left for Aaron Jones and Corey Linsley. So it depends on what they draft, too.
So where does, you know, what's interesting about Clark and Bakhtiari, there's only one franchise tag. And yeah. Both of those guys can very easily set the market at their respective positions. And left tackle, obviously, is premier, and that interior pass rusher is becoming premier. I mean, honestly, Tom, I think that's why guards are getting paid tackle money nowadays. So what kind of bind does that put Brian Gutekunst in to a degree? Because it's not necessarily one or the other, but you really have to get one of them done in this current period, right? Because, or I'm trying to remember from the CBA, is there still the transition tag?
No.
So just the one tag.
You get one franchise.
Yeah.
Or one transition, one or the other.
One or the other. So they're, right? I mean, you don't really want to be in that situation.
No, because the closer you get to free agency, the higher the number goes. And if Kenny Clark comes up with a 10-sack season, look out. I mean, then his number goes from $20 million a year to $25 million a year. You know, so that's part of the reason why you get it done now. Also, you get the benefit of the fact he has 1 year left, so you get somewhat of a credit for that. Bakhtiari, you don't want to mess around with that either. I really feel like that's not something that you want to do, and his number's going to go way up too. I mean, he's an all-pro tackle, Pro Bowl left tackle, and his number is going to be pretty high. So that's two big name guys. And the thing is, the big thing is, you could sign a big free agent and then structure Bakhtiari and Clark's numbers so that they're not so high this year. But you got to remember, Aaron Rodgers' number goes up to, in 2 years, goes up to $39 million. The two Smiths are both around $20 million. Next year, Devontae Adams' number is up at like 14 or 16 or something like that. I mean, you're basically going to have five guys in the next 2 years, each of the next 2 years, accounting for half your salary cap. So you've got to be able to use some space this year. Otherwise, boy, if you have an injury or two injuries, you know, career-ending kind of things where you have to cut a guy, you're down for a year or two. You know, you're a 4-12 team for a while.
And that is, and the reason I, to kind of wrap this particular free agency podcast up, even though it's not as sexy and as exciting as last year's, is for that reason, Tom. I think it's easy for people to forget that with those cap dynamics, and they look at it over that, you know, Russ Ball and Brian Gutekunst are looking at that, that, you know, 1 to 5 year window of contracts. And if you're going to pay your quarterback $30 million, if you're going to pay Kenny Clark $20 million and Bakhtiari $20 million, well, that means you need, you know, backup linemen on rookie deals. That means your running back room has to be on rookie deals. That means, mm-hmm. that means three of your six or four of your six wide receivers are on rookie deals. I mean,
yes.
Or, you know, in the tight end room, two rookie deals and a Mercedes Lewis. Like, that's how that all balances out, and it does take you out of play for the quote-unquote name receivers or name tight ends or whomever else maybe people were pining for this particular offseason.
Yeah, no question. There is one other free agent note that we never got to, which is the fact that Clay Matthews got released by the Rams.
Oh, you remembered.
I remember that for sure.
Yeah. I had said, you know, if our Twitter listeners, I had said I would debate you on this.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember when they decided to sign the two Smiths, one of the coaches from McCarthy's staff said to me, he was like, I don't understand why they won't sign him to a low-end deal. He really wants to come back, and he's not asking for that much. He wants to retire as a Packer. And I thought about it, and, you know, my answer was, well, they don't need him at outside linebacker. I mean, you don't want him interfering with what you've got with Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. And then eventually it turned out to be Rashawn Gary too. But if you could get something out of him at inside linebacker, I think that at the right price, he could help you. I think he's better than anything they got. And I think he still has enough pass rush ability that if something happened to either of the ends, either of the outside linebackers, he could help you there too. I just think it's worth exploring to see what the price would be.
So I guess where I get hung up on Matthews, there's two reasons. One, Brian Gutekunst has shown Jordy Nelson the door, Randall Cobb the door, Clay Matthews the door, Brian Bulaga the door. I mean, someone might say Tremont Williams, but is back. But first of all, I feel like Goody has shown when he's made that decision is made. And there's no going back. But second, let's just say, of all these things we've talked about, maybe Clay Matthews doesn't have a job in June, right? And he just wants to play. Mm-hmm. But if you're – here's the thing. He's 8.5 sacks away from 100. He's a pass rusher. 100, we could debate this maybe on another day, but almost all of the 34 linebackers or people with 100 career sacks, Tom, are either in the Hall of Fame or they're close or they're active and will be in that conversation. If you're that guy and you've got a ring, you've got the All-Pros, you've got why would you come to a team, play 20% of the snaps where they're just asking you to run and hit linebackers and tight ends and maybe cover, which you can't do anyway. Like, there's nothing.
That's not true. Clay Matthews can cover. Clay Matthews is a good cover linebacker.
You think he can still cover?
Yeah, I do. I still think he has. I think he covers probably maybe as well or better than he rushes the passer now. I think he's a worse pass rusher than he is probably a guy in coverage now. Now he can't, he doesn't run as well as he did when he first came into the league, but he's pretty smart and is good on zone drops. And he's better than you think he is, really. He is a better cover guy than you think he is.
Okay, but I guess all that to get, like, to me, none of that makes sense. I guess it makes sense to, as you said at the start, Brian Gutekunst will he'll make the calls. You know, who's interested? What's the number? I'm interested. Can it fit? I guess for me, I just didn't understand where the marriage might come back when, A, the personnel guy clearly made the decision to move on a year ago, and now you've got a player, I guess if you have a choice, if you're Clay Matthews, like, I don't, that doesn't make sense to me to be asked to do something that maybe he did well 5 years ago, 6 years ago, playing inside linebacker, to do it again. I don't know. It just, I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a good fit. It just didn't, it just, there's parts of it I can't reconcile from both the team's end and his end.
So from his end, I believe that winning another Super Bowl or finishing his career with Green Bay is important to him.
Okay.
I think that's why he was willing to take less when, last off season, because he did want to stay here. Don't forget his dad played inside linebacker. So there's no, you know, back when he was younger, all the money, all the glory, everything was in sacks. And I think that part of his career is over. He got, you know, he was 8.5 sacks last year. Great. But he's not going to be earning any great, huge contract or anything by rushing the passer anymore. I think you have to, of course, you have to sit him down and find out if he's completely down with playing inside. If he is, I would consider it. Now, you brought up Jordy Nelson. Jordy Nelson was done. I mean, he was done as a player. There was nothing. He couldn't play anymore, and he pretty much showed it in Oakland. You know, Matthews got 8.5 sacks. From the guys I've talked to, they said he still has something left. It's not the same as what he had, but he would be a veteran presence. If they had an inside linebacker, two inside linebackers, or even just one, you know, veteran guy, I wouldn't even be thinking about it. But I just think the fact that they have nothing there other than Kirksey right now, who's, we don't know whether he can last three games, and not a great shot that they'll get a guy in the early part of the draft, I would definitely consider it at the right price. So yeah. That's my say on it.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. We disagree. We'll see. You're right. I would be, to be a fly on the wall to hear Matt LaFleur and Mike Pettine have to tell Clay Matthews to be okay with playing 20 snaps a game on rundowns. And
but that's the thing. I don't know that he would have to. I don't think he'd have to play 20 snaps. I think in that situation, you have Kirksey and Matthews on the field, and you don't have to play Ibrahim Campbell there anymore. You know, you have a guy who can run like Kirksey. That's the whole idea of it.
Okay, and so you would sign him to start at inside linebacker.
Oh, absolutely.
Just, wow, okay. Yeah.
I don't know who they have. Who's their starter right now? Oren Burks?
That's a good question. I guess I...
Ty Summers, maybe?
Yeah, I... You know, that's...
That's why I would do it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. We should dial up Mike Pettine, see if he wants to just play a safety in there, if he really wants a... another true traditional inside linebacker.
Yeah.
Maybe he wants Will Redmond down there. I don't know. I mean,
I think that safety thing has passed him by. I think that was a nice little niche for a while and was good for Mark Barron and a couple other guys. But I kind of feel like that's gone. I don't know. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
I think it leaves you too vulnerable against the run.
Yeah, I guess that's part of the equation. I did not forecast when I made Packers Twitter like all really mad last week, Tom, when I suggested why would Clay Matthews come back, and I would debate you on this. I honestly wouldn't have assumed the idea of him starting and playing a ton in that role, but you know, maybe that could change. Maybe that would change. Well, everyone, I'm sure you were so excited to get Tom and I back within a shouting distance, but not a physical distance. And be sure to, wherever you're listening around the globe, or locally in Wisconsin and Milwaukee and Green Bay, you know, stay home, wash your hands, or in the immortal words of Devontae Adams, wash your butt, wash your hands. and just be kind to one another, and be mindful as well. First responders, essential working personnel, which in this current climate includes people at your grocery stores, your delivery drivers, your local businesses who are going out to curbside. All those people deserve both your patronage and your kindness and warmth in this time. Of course, our hospital workers as well. So that PSA out of the way, Tom and I, now that we have figured this out, we will be back with you. You won't have to wait this long without us. The draft is coming up, so we'll be getting into some of that stuff. And of course, if there's any major breaking news, we'll be able to get a podcast out to you in short order as well. So
yeah, maybe we could even, since nobody's got anything to do, maybe we could do a all questions podcast in a week or so or something like that. Have it all reader questions.
You know what? I am so up for that. I'm curious if you are, Tom. I'm I'm willing to engage any and all comers.
Yeah.
Would you be ready for that?
Yeah, we'll put that out on Twitter and maybe even find a way to get it on the website for those who aren't on Twitter or on our Facebook page. So I'm gonna let you know.
Yeah, I could see Tom on our video feed here, and I don't think he's all too sure as what may be coming his way. So by all means, surprise us as you start to think of some of those. So we look forward to it, and we will talk to you soon. So for Tom, I am Jim. Talk to you next time.